Series of community forums on Zenith Energy's tar sands oil export expansion. This event will supply project background, climate justice impacts, health and safety risks, and ideas for public action around Zenith's oil terminal. A variety of perspectives will be presented. Again, that's the Zenith's Tar Sands Oil Expansion Community Forum on Friday, April 5th, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. at the City of Portland Water Pollution Control Laboratory, 6543 North Burlington Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this
KBOO
is
Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. The AM radio zine continues with this edition of Between the Covers, featuring Suzanne Legrand speaking with artist, writer, and author Austin Kleon, discussing his latest book, Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad, on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Between the Covers. I am your host, Suzanne Legrand, and today my guest is artist, writer, and author Austin Kleon, who is here to talk about his latest book, Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, to begin, could you tell us a little bit about what inspired Keep Going?
Yes, Keep Going was born of two things. One, I found myself a few years ago, like many of my colleagues, incredibly distracted by the kind of our nation's descent into madness, and just kind of the tone of social media and the kind of hostile vibe that was kind of has been going on for the past couple of years. And then on the other hand, you know, I've been doing creative work for about a decade now professionally, and it doesn't seem to be getting any easier. And I really thought
darn,
it would be easier.
We all do.
And so, you know, things got a lot better for me once I realized, hey, the world is crazy and creative work is hard. And the real question, once you accept that, becomes how do you keep going? Mm-hmm. How do you maintain yourself sort of indefinitely in a creative career? And that's where the book began.
Mm-hmm. You say at some point that this is a book about how to stay creative, focused, and true to yourself for life, which I think is, I think that's probably a pretty good summary of the book. You also say that creative life is not a linear journey to a finish line, it's a loop. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm. I find that with creative work, you know, when I'm reading interviews with other artists or other writers, there's this thing that happens where you think you're going to somehow arrive when you start off. Like, you think that you're going to hit this moment, and everyone's going to, there's going to be this collective applause, and like, you'll have arrived and made it, and someone comes out with a sword and like knights you or whatever. But what I think is really funny about creative work is no matter what you achieve, like you could win the Oscar or you could win a Pulitzer Prize or you could be on stage and getting a Grammy. And the thing that they ask you on the red carpet afterwards is, so what's next for you?
Mm-hmm.
So like as a writer, say you put out a big bestseller and you get everything you ever wanted. Well, guess what? Now you have to write another book for all the people who read your last book. And so I think that this can be a very hard thing to navigate for creative people, because you're sort of always going back to the drawing board, so to speak. And one thing I've noticed about people who manage to have long careers is that they establish some sort of daily habit or daily practice, that they know they're going to operate in some certain way every day, no matter of what happens with their last project. So whether they're facing failure, great success, or crickets chirping, they know what they're going to do tomorrow. They're going to get up and do the work. And so I wanted to write about that and how people can find that at whatever point they are in their career, because if you can establish that kind of daily practice, it'll take you through your days and it'll take you through your career no matter what.
You say something really wonderful, which I just want to quote here. You say, I don't want to know how a 30-year-old became rich and famous. I want to hear how an 80-year-old spent her life in obscurity, kept making art and lived a happy life. I want to know how Bill Cunningham jumped on his bicycle every day and rode around New York City taking photos in his 80s. I want to know how Joan Rivers was able to tell jokes right up until the end. And so I want to ask you, did you discover some ways to do that, that they did that, and also that we can keep doing that? You talk about a daily routine. Are there other things that keep us going?
Yeah, I think that I think for longevity, I mean, first of all, I think these people find something that they're just insanely passionate about, and they just couldn't do anything else. So I think in some ways, David Hockney, you know, if he doesn't paint, like, he's going to die, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a quote by Willie Nelson that opens the book, and he said, you know, I think playing music and being creative keeps me alive. Mm-hmm. You know, the message comes from a lot of these older artists is that the work actually keeps them going, that the work itself keeps them going. And I think one way, other than like a daily habit or a daily practice, I think that there are ways to kind of fall back in love with your work if you've lost the love for it, because what a lot of these people have done is they've turned their passions into their careers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, as we all know, when we turn the thing we love into our job, it becomes a job.
Yes,
and we have
yes.
to, like, you know, we have to figure out ways to kind of rekindle our passion for the things that we do. And so I usually recommend a couple of things. One is, I think that everyone needs to have playtime. I think creative people, they need to be able to play. And play is a very distinct thing from work. Play, you're not really worried about the results or where you get to. You know, play is about just exploring and sort of moving and practicing. And I also think that, you know, the pressures of a creative career can get really great over time. So I think that we need to have what Joseph Campbell called a bliss station, a place that you go to every day where no one can really get to you, or you don't really know what was in the papers that morning, and you can kind of go and disconnect from the world so that you can disconnect from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a third thing I would mention, and I think this is really true of people like, say, David Bowie, who had such a long career, is you're allowed to change your mind, and you're allowed to change and be chameleon-like. Like, you're allowed to put things down and try something else. You're allowed to try another genre. You're allowed to try another format or pick up another instrument. You know, that was something that David Hockney was really brilliant at, is you know, finding new mediums to become obsessed with. You know, he left painting for a while and focused on photography. When copy machines came out, he had fun playing with them and figuring out how they could be made for art. So you're allowed to change and grow. And, you know, I think young people right now, when they're thinking about getting famous or building an audience, they're always encouraged to become brands,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And, yes, you and talk about with, that.
Yeah, the trouble with being a brand is that, you know, you always have to be on brand then, and to be on brand means to kind of do things the same way all the time. And so we need some time to go off brand and to really explore and see where we can take ourselves next.
You know, that's an interesting thing that you talk about throughout the book, is kind of the need to not always be doing work that is commercial or attempting to do something that's going to be sold. And you say something that I think is a little bit controversial, perhaps, which is that we should let our hobbies be hobbies and not turn them into side hustles, which is a very popular sentiment now, especially given the economy. Can you talk a little bit about why maybe we want to keep our hobbies hobbies rather than try to make money from them?
Well, first of all, I would never want to de-emphasize the role that the economy plays in a lot of this. I mean, I think that particularly creative people, and really people of all kinds of work, are being squeezed more than ever in our country. And I think that the idea that you could take something that you kind of do for fun and make a little bit of money off of it is a very, like, it's very appealing, you know, and sometimes it seems essential. But I would always caution people who turn their hobbies into a profession, because then what happens to your hobby, you know? Because hobbies are things that they seem carefree and fun, but I think hobbies can really sustain us in tough times. And I think that having a passion or even a pastime in your life that isn't driven by market forces is really powerful. And the writer who wrote really beautifully about it that might surprise some people is George Orwell, who, of course, wrote Animal Farm in 1984. He wrote really beautifully in wartime about the British and their penchant for hobbies. And he talked about how he felt that one reason that Britain was kind of resistant to fascism was that they were really into hobbies, and they were really into hobbies that were about the individual. And he felt that hobbies kept this individual spirit alive and shored up people and kind of fortified them to not be kind of taken by, like, the kind of mass hysteria of politics. And I find this a really, really powerful idea, and something that not a lot of people in American life talk about, is that hobbies can actually be a very political thing. They can be a way to kind of fortify yourself against the forces of the dominant culture.
Mm-hmm. And also not be so beholden to what's happening in the outside world all the time.
Yes, exactly. It's a way to pull yourself out of time, you know, out of the current time. And that was something I was really obsessed with when writing this book, is kind of how do we temporarily leave the chaos of today, and, you know, kind of how do we kind of visit the past and listen to what people in other chaotic times thought, and then kind of transport into the future in our minds to think about where we want to be and how what we do today can get us there. And really the only way to do that kind of thinking is to really pull yourself out of the current moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, thankfully visiting the past is really easy because so many people left themselves in books and movies and poems and art and all kinds of stuff. So it's very easy actually to do what Auden called breaking bread with the dead.
Right, right. You know, and you talk about that as one of the 10 things, which is reading old books, which I really love that suggestion, that we can learn a lot from the past that gives us perspective that we don't have right now.
This is something that, you know, as a contemporary author and a bestseller, you know, I'm loath to tell people don't worry too much about new books, but I find so much just heartening in books that are at least, you know, even going back 25 years. Just reading a book that's 25 years old can really be an exercise in just perspective, really, because, you know, one of the people I was reading a lot during the writing of this book was Henry David Thoreau, which I think people sometimes think of Thoreau as kind of a fuddy-duddy. Like, I think he's gotten kind of a bad rap in the past couple of years, but when I read Thoreau, he's, you know, he's overeducated. He lives with his parents. He's really upset about the government. He really loves his plants. He sort of sounds like a millennial.
Absolutely.
To me. You know? And it's really funny because Thoreau's one of those guys that was trying to figure out, like, he just felt like the world was going crazy, and he felt like the world was pulling him away from the work that he was trying to do. And so at one point, Thoreau writes in his journal about how he stopped reading a weekly newspaper because it was just too much. It was too much news. It was taking him away from his everyday life. And I thought that was hilarious because now I feel like, you know, a daily newspaper seems about the right amount of news in someone's life, or a weekly newspaper. But this is the kind of perspective you get when you listen to people who have been dead for 100 years.
Right. And also that connects with another suggestion that you have, which is to get out and take walks and to actually be outdoors to get perspective as well.
This is so important. And people are like, what do you mean go for a walk? Isn't the world crazy outside? And I'm like, well, here's the thing. You know, when you're online, when you're on Twitter, say, everyone seems like a troll or a maniac or worse, you know? Mm-hmm. But then you go outside and it's like, you know, sure, there are a few maniacs, depending on what street you're on. But, like, you go outside and there's just possibility. You know, there's people going about their lives. There's people being kind to one another. There's someone helping an old lady across the street. There's clouds. There's sky. There's, you know, there's people out selling stuff in front of the marketplace. You know, there's really, there's this whole living, breathing world that you can access with your own senses. And that is what's so great about walking, is that it really fires all five senses, mm-hmm. and actually other senses too, if you think about like kinesthetic sense and stuff like that. So I think that walking and getting out in your world and taking a walk every day is one of the most centering activities you can do, because it really awakens you to your actual living, breathing world with your own senses.
Yes. It also relates to another theme of your book that I'd like to ask you about, and that is the role of attention. Throughout the book, you talk a lot about paying attention to what you're paying attention to and the need to focus. I just want to quote, you say, your attention is one of the most valuable things that you possess, which is why everyone wants to steal it from you. First, you must protect it, and then you must point it in the right direction. So I wanted to ask you, why do you think it's so hard both to stay focused and also to stay focused on what's most important?
Well, I think two things. I think one, you know, we're in a world now where everyone is literally vying for your attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, the companies want it so they can sell you stuff. Politicians want it so they can sell you stuff, you know, and even your friends want it so they can post their, you know, mm-hmm. so you can admire their vacation photos or their lunch or whatever it is, you know. And a lot of these platforms that we've signed on for, like Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, like, their whole business model is to take your attention away from your everyday life, is to kind of have you clicking and glued to your phone. And so there's that, and we all kind of know that, right? We all kind of know that we're being pulled in a million directions in our attention. But I think the deeper, kind of harder problem is that we don't even know what we want to pay attention to, because we don't get any time to really explore that anymore. We don't get those quiet spaces in which we're, you know, kind of alone with ourselves and our thoughts. And we don't even really get a chance to think about what it is that's really important to us. So for me, I think for one of the most valuable things someone can do in their life is to just keep a plain old simple daily diary. Because I think what is so cool about a diary is it's a private kind of walled garden that you go to. And you just kind of dump out what's in your head onto the page. And then the second step that a lot of people don't talk about with a diary is actually rereading your diary. Because a lot of people, when they're talking about a diary, they're like, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, what you do with it afterwards. It's just about getting the words on the page. But I find when I reread my diaries, they're like a map of my own inner state. You know, they show me where I've been, and they show me that a lot of the feelings that I think are really, like, terrible right now are just, they're like waves that come in from the shore, you know, and then crash and they're gone. And so, like, rereading my diaries gives me this kind of enormous amount of perspective about my own life. And they show me what I keep stumbling on, like, and what I keep writing about. And over time, they show, hey, here's what's really bothering you, or here's what's really important to you. And so I think there's many ways. I don't think you just have to find a diary. You know, I don't think you just have to keep a diary. But there are so many different ways of paying attention to life in this way. You can, you know, you can take photos. You can, you know, draw in a sketchbook. I mean, even practicing any kind of art in a way is a way of paying attention to the world and then figuring out what you're paying attention to.
So that's really interesting. That's also a way to, as you are talking about it, to find out what it is you do value.
Yeah, when do we get any time to think about what we actually value? Because I think that's one of the crucial questions of this time and any time is, what do you want to see survive in the world? You know, what do you want to, you know, really make sure is passed on to the people that come after you? It's especially true, I think, in a democracy. You know, all of us as citizens sort of have to say, hey, here's what we, you know, here's what I believe is a fundamental thing in this democracy that I want to see survive. And so, like, for me, for example, public libraries are a thing that they are kind of in the middle of a Venn diagram of what I hold dear personally and something that I think helps keep a healthy country and a democracy going, right? So, like, identifying just things like that in your life that you want to see survive, when do you get the time to do that? You know, I mean, we're all busy, and, you know, the powers that be don't necessarily want you to think about what's valuable because they have something that they want to give you and what they have something that they want you to think. And so
reclaiming your attention is also reclaiming your ability to do what matters.
Absolutely. To reclaim your attention is exactly that. It's to really gain control over what matters. And I think that's why I started to kind of get some sort of control over your days when the world seems chaotic. I think that's why I started the book with the movie Groundhog Day, because I, you know, at first people kind of laugh, oh, I love that movie. But it, when you kind of dig into that movie, which is about a weatherman played by Bill Murray who wakes up every day on Groundhog Day and he can't get to February 3rd. But what's really amazing about that movie to me is that this guy kind of finds himself in this situation that he has absolutely no control over, and the only thing he can really control is what he does with the day. And what he does with the day provides the meaning for his life. And I think that is the very deep, deep message that comes from that movie, is that, you know, what you do with your days is what gives meaning to your life, and how you pay attention to your world and what you pay attention to is actually the stuff that makes up your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for those folks in Portland, I just want to let you know that Austin will be reading from his book, Keep Going, the one that we've just been talking about, at Powell's City of Books in downtown Portland on April 11th at 7:30 p.m. So this is a opportunity to hear Austin live talk about all these wonderful things that he's talking about in his book. I wanted to ask you, you also talk about how the relationship between art and life, and you say that worry less about being a great artist. Worry more about being a good human being who makes art. Worry less about making a mark. Worry more about leaving things better than you found them. Could you talk a little bit about how artists and people in general can leave things better than they found them?
Yeah, I think that the thing that bothers me the most right now in our culture are some of the slogans that we use for creative work. So you think about, like, someone saying, you know, you have to make your mark. Or, you know, you have Steve Jobs who said, you know, put a dent in the universe. Or you have Mark Zuckerberg's company, Facebook, where they say, move fast and break things. These are all vandalism metaphors.
Yes.
You know, this is all thinking about creative work in terms of what you kind of deface or destroy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, I want a better metaphor for creative work. So I'm trying to look around for slogans. You know, I'm kind of an intellectual thief. So I'm always looking for things that I can, you know, steal for another context. So I'm trying to find other places that we might find better slogans. So,
and you come up with some great ones. You say we need art that tidies, art that repairs, that makes things better than you found them. So a sense of the possibility of not breaking the world, but actually making it whole again.
Well, the poet Wendell Berry says that this is an age of divorce. And that, you know, things have been broken and split apart, and that the job of the artist is to find two things and put them back together again.
Find two things.
And to kind of reunite things and to mend them. And I find that idea so heartening and so powerful, because when we look around the world, you know, we see what's broken. You know, we see the things that have been broken. And to think about our creative work in terms of, you know, mending or repairing or tidying, I just think that points us in a much better direction than these vandalism metaphors.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I have been speaking today with Austin Kleon, who is the author of Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad. And he is going to be reading from his new book at Powell's City of Books in Portland on April 11th at 7:30 p.m. Please go see him. And also, if you're interested more, if you're interested in his work, you can visit him at austinkleon.com. So thank you so much for joining us today on Between the Covers.
Thank you for your time and attention. I had a tremendous amount of fun.
Great, me too.
KABOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, April 8th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. When their relationship turns sour, a couple undergoes a medical procedure to have each other erased from their memories.
I'm erasing you and I'm happy! You did it to me first!
I can't believe you did this to me!
Again, that's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, showing Monday, April 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the world premiere of Jump, co-produced by Confrontation Theater and the Milagro Theater. The play runs from March 21st through April 13th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Jump is the story of a 20-something who is reeling from the death of her mother. She is looking for solace in a good place to vape, but what she finds is a journey of self-discovery. Again, that's Jump. Every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from March 21st through April 13th at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 11 a.m. It's, what, fifth Friday? No, it's fourth Friday. It's first Friday, which means it's time for the final episode by the current collective of A Radio Geekly. One last time to chat about famous finales in geekdom, as well as their favorite moments from the last 3 years. Presumably that means of the program. And this can only happen with the support of the community, the listening audience, and all of our friends and neighbors. And that's you, my friends. If it's not yet you, you may correct that oversight at kboo.fm. Click on the word donate. As always, I am honored, privileged, as well as contractually obligated to remind you of another member of our community who got involved in the way that made